Spectator magazine is the greatest magazine in the English language. Subscribe today for just £12 and receive a 12-week subscription in print and online to see for yourselves. Also, against my advice as editor, we're giving away a free £20 John Lewis or Waitrose voucher. Given that you're spending 12 quid, you can do the maths. Go to spectator.co.uk/voucher. But don't hurry, because this offer probably loses us money.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Katie Balls and I'm joined by Isvar Hardman and James Hill. So, Angela Rayner faced the music today in the Commons Chamber at PMQs. Rishi Sunak is out the country, more on that later. So it was Rayner versus Dowden, and we can hear a clip now of her describing the Prime Minister's height.
I read with interest that the Right Honourable Gentleman has been urging his neighbour in Number 10 to call an election because he's worried they might get wiped out. Has he finally realised that when he stabbed Boris Johnson in the back to get his mate into Number 10, he was ditching their biggest election winner for a pint-sized loser?
As oratory goes, was this on a particularly high level, would you say, Isabel?
Well, I mean, it's nice to have a break from two men arguing that their party is a little less bad than the other and talking about the NHS in Labour-run Wales. So, I'm not going to complain. I thought that Angela Rayner obviously came into the chamber knowing that somebody might quite quickly bring up the police investigation into whether she has broken, among other things, electoral law over her living arrangements back in, I think it was 2010. And so she decided to actually frame the whole session around this, which I thought was typically Rayner sort of, you know, quite ballsy and quite artful. So she started out by saying that, I know that members opposite will want to talk about my living arrangements, but what the country cares about is their own living arrangements. And then immediately moved on to the Renters Reform Bill, which MPs are debating the remaining stages of in the Commons this afternoon, and Michael Gove saying that he couldn't guarantee that the ban on no-fault evictions would be in place by the next election. And that was something that the Housing Secretary has only just said. So it was a way of basically, you know, continuing the theme that Keir Starmer has of the Conservatives not actually, you know, doing what they've promised to do and things not working, but in a very Angela Rayner-esque way. And then we had, and I always think it's quite sweet when Oliver Dowden does PMQs, because obviously he's, you know, he's written PMQs answers for how many Tory leaders is it? I think four or five over the years. He's been on so many prep teams for Conservative leaders. And he always looks so happy when he gets to say the jokes rather than watching somebody else deliver and possibly butcher them. And I don't think I've seen someone at the dispatch box look happier to be doing their joke than Oliver Dowden today, when he said that it was always a pleasure to do this session with Angela Rayner, and that if they did it any more, then she would have to designate it her principal residence. People laughed, Angela Rayner rolled her eyes. But, you know, actually, to be fair, it was a reasonably policy-rich session. It did then deteriorate somewhat into backbench MPs just wanting to talk about how bad the other party in their local elections battle was, which, you know, you'd expect given the proximity of polling day in the local elections. But I've definitely sat through worse ones with Rishi Sunak and Keir Starmer. So Oliver Dowden's happy and I'm happy.
And that's all we need in this life. James, just quickly before we move on to the other big announcement. Now, as Isabel said, the Tories were put under pressure on leasehold reform, amongst other issues, and areas where Labour, I think, thinks it can make an advance in an election. But this was an appearance where Angela Rayner almost went on the offensive from the beginning in acknowledgement that she does have this police investigation rumbling on. Do you think that after this she'll have assured her Labour colleagues by coming out fighting? Do you think it was a performance that will have, I don't know, calmed things?
I mean, I thought it was a bit of a school draw overall. I mean, I was in the chamber, and what was striking was actually how Angela Rayner, who is normally such a confident Commons performer, was actually quite nervous. She fluffed some of her lines. She appeared to be a bit sort of nervous looking down. So I think that it wasn't, you know, the kind of confident bravura performance you might want, sort of bang your back to the wall, etc. A bit like Margaret Thatcher in 1990 in that vote of no confidence after she resigned. But I do think, you know, it had done enough, basically. And her final riposte, shall we say, was interesting. Though, of course, it does make a bit of a mockery after the weeks of everyone going, poor Angela Rayner, the Northern woman. How can she expect to know what happened 10 years ago? The Labour front bench is saying that. So I think it was a reasonable performance in the circumstances. She tried to take the heat out of it by sort of leading on it preemptively. And there was, as Isabel said, some proper policy to discuss.
And Isabel, yesterday, and the reason the Prime Minister not PMQs today is that he was in Poland and then he is in Germany today. And in Poland, he announced his plan to bring defence spending to 2.5% of GDP by 2030. That used to be the Boris Johnson pledge. Rishi Sunak stalled the pledge, citing problems in the economy, and now feels able to do so. Today was being asked some questions on how exactly he's going to fund it, because it's about cutting civil servants to a degree. Can you tell us more?
There were a lot of questions after this defence spending announcement, as you'd expect. And one of the suggestions that was made by Ben Wallace, who Rishi Sunak had tried to get on side for this defence spending announcement, he'd phoned Wallace and James Heapy, also a former defence minister. Ben Wallace was obviously defence secretary. He'd phoned both of them before making the announcement and had clearly hoped, as both of them then did, that they'd go out on the broadcast media and sell this announcement and say it was the real deal. But what Ben Wallace did that wasn't helpful was to suggest on Radio 4 that it was probably going to come from the Conservatives ditching a tax cut that they were going to announce at the next election. At which point, quite a few people got upset about that as well. And so Rishi Sunak was asked about this in Berlin, and he said that this was from, that his plan was fully funded and that he was going to cut the civil service rather than dropping promises to make tax cuts because he believes in cutting taxes. But there has also been quite a bit of discrepancy between the various Treasury model, the various Treasury modellings on how much money is going to be raised from the various policies with regard to civil service. And I think there was, I wasn't in the huddle after Prime Minister's questions with Prime Minister's team that we have between journalists and Downing Street after every session. But there was a bit of confusion over how much civil service job cuts could save, with Downing Street saying at this huddle that it could save 2.9 billion when the government did previously say 1 billion. So obviously, you know, that's not really a rounding error. That's quite a big gap in cash. So apparently, Downing Street have clarified this and have said that this is how much would be saved by starting to reduce the civil service headcount from 2025 to 26 onwards, which would apparently get us to 2.9 billion by 2028-29. And obviously the pledge for defence spending to 2.5% of GDP is by 2030. So that's how they've made those numbers add up.
And James, just finally, is this a problem for Keir Starmer? I think it's definitely the case that Rishi Sunak's announcement has played well to the Tory base. You have some figures in the party who are not normally Rishi Sunak's biggest fans, who for once sending positive messages rather than complaints. And I think there was a sense perhaps it should have been in the spring budget, but they're just happy it's happened. Some want him to go further. But of course, it does mean the Labour position, the Tory position, which probably was the same for about a week and a half, no longer.
I think it is an issue. I think, first of all, you know, Keir Starmer has done great strides to kind of take that 20-point gap that initially the Conservatives had it on defence 2 years ago and make it now, Labour are now more trusted on defence. But it is an issue, I think, and you've seen that in the initial response with Steve Reid yesterday and Emily Thornley this morning giving slightly different answers over whether Labour would commit to 2.5% or not. Of course, the other thing is, I was talking to one Labour aide last night who made the point that every Labour shadow minister is going in there with a begging bowl saying, I need this area or that area needs more spending. And of course, traditionally, if you look at the Labour Party's incentives and where they choose to spend money, traditionally, they've always preferred welfare spending over the past, you know, 50, 60 years or so, rather than increased expenditure on defence. So it is a difficult issue. It's not just confined to the area of defence, but also Labour's whole fiscal plans in the entirety, at a time, of course, when Rachel Reeves is very much presenting herself as the Iron Shadow Chancellor.
Thank you, James. Thank you, Isabel. And thank you for listening.